All right, so we've been going through Luke's gospel. We just concluded that last section there, his authority and his kingdom. And we've been saying that as we've been moving through this, Luke is taking us really on a journey. And we've been watching Jesus from the very beginning, from his birth and his entry into our world, and have been watching him now until we get to the point where we're really now going to start looking at the, he was here ministering for about 3 years. What's been happening, even though, we don't have an account of every day and every minute of every day of his life, but what we've been reading to this point has taken roughly a 2 year period. When we start into the portion that we're going to begin with this morning, and especially next week, we're moving into the last actual year and then into the last few months of his life. And so there's this destiny that Luke has been painting for us. Because if we're going to understand Jesus as the Son of Man and therefore the Redeemer, then we've got to understand that there was a purpose that he was here. He wasn't just here like any other religious leader, sort of hanging out, doing the best he could with what he had, and proclaiming peace and all of these other things. He was much different than any of those people. We're going to see that, as a matter of fact, today. There was a purpose that he came, and he had set his face towards that. And we're going to see that next week, that we're going to notice from a specific point. Luke is going to tell us, and he set his face sternly towards Jerusalem. And that's very significant, because he knew what it was facing him in Jerusalem. And that was his rejection, the abuse, the betrayal, all of the stuff that came with that, and then ultimately his death. But he was able to face Jerusalem and make that journey because he knew that none of those things could stop what he was here to do. And of course, that he fills us in with the resurrection. So before we move into this next aspect of this, we've seen his authority because of who he is and his kingdom. And then we saw his commission to the apostles. We talked about this last week. The first time that anybody is sent out with the message of who Jesus is. Now, the prophets had all looked forward to this. And we're going to see here later on this morning that what they saw was only sort of the peaks, the mountain peaks. What they failed to understand was where you and I live now, which we call the church age. They were unable to see that. Now, had they really understood the Old Testament scriptures, they would have understood. But we know that they didn't, because even the apostles, as we're going to see here this morning, didn't get it. And their whole focus was kingdom oriented. And so Jesus sends them out. He commissions them to go. And he does this with, remember, he called them. He gives them his power, his authority. Then he sends them. And then he commands them on how they're to go. And then we saw his concern. And this, of course, was the concern for the multitudes. And it wasn't because the multitudes were hungry and needed bread, though that was true, nor fish. His concern for them was that they were like sheep without a shepherd. And the whole lesson there for the thousands that were gathered that day, and specifically for those he had called to follow him, the apostles, the lesson was that the only way you're going to find what it is you're looking for to fill that hole inside you, in this case, hunger is used as a symbol of the spiritual. The only way you're going to fill yourself is to feast on that which he alone can provide. Okay? He provides it, but then he asks his people to give it out. So they don't give the provision, they pass out the provision that Jesus has supplied. And then, of course, his concern was also not just for the crowds, but for his followers, for all those who were following, because they weren't getting it. They knew he was something special. We're going to see this morning that they even came to terms with who he was in one sense, but they couldn't look beyond that. So that's where it leads us to today. So understanding his authority and his kingdom. Now we're going to move into, and this is really going to take us, as you can see from the 18th verse in Luke's gospel here this morning. We're not going to get all these in today, obviously. But from this verse, starting in verse 18 of chapter 9, all the way to the 23rd chapter and the 56th verse. So the whole next section of this is about Jesus establishing the fact that he was Messiah, the anointed, the one established and prophesied and proclaimed by God himself, the Spirit of God, the prophets of God. And this is who they were all looking for. That's what Messiah meant. They understood that. Just was their understanding was a little bit twisted. So let's read this now as we look at these first few verses here. And it happened. I love how when Luke says that, only a doctor would write something like that. And it just so happened. Yeah, nothing that Jesus did just happened, did it? And it happened as he was alone praying that his disciples joined him. And he asked them, saying, "Who do the crowds say that I am?" So they answered, and they said, "Well, some are saying John the Baptist. Others are saying Elijah. But then others are also saying that you're one of the prophets, that one of the old prophets has risen again." And here's the question for everyone. And he said to them, "But who do you say that I am?" Now, there's a very significant aspect that's happening here. Because notice what Jesus is doing to begin with. He's praying. Why? Now, we've read repeatedly. This is the third of seven times Luke records for us Jesus praying. And of course, there was obviously thousands of times more that Luke didn't record. But Luke is writing a story for us to tell us about this guy, Jesus, and what he was all about, what he was like. And so this is the third time that he's told us. And he said that it just happens that Jesus was praying. Well, when was Jesus praying? Well, he was praying after he had multiplied the bread and the fish for the great miracle of the 5,000 there. See? And then they had apparently started, as I said last week, they had started to go north, which is they're going to go, and then they're going to turn around and go directly south. They were on the northern side, the northern shore of the Sea of Galilee, even as we know it today. They were at a city called Bethsaida, the house of fish. And they had gone from that city of Bethsaida, and they had gone into the wilderness, and the people had followed him, and that's why they were out in the wilderness, but they hadn't brought anything to eat. And that's where he feeds them. And of course, now the crowds have dispersed, and he's continuing briefly up north into a more wilderness area, and he's headed for Mount Hermon. Okay, but they're sort of between the Sea of Galilee and Mount Hermon, and they've gone up, and this is where they are now. And at some point out there, with the crowds not around, Jesus finds the time to separate himself unto God, and he begins to pray. And I think it's very significant that this is where we find him at this point, because there's a major transition that's going to take place in his ministry. People that record this stuff always call these the years of opportunity, or the years of popularity that Jesus was in. I mean, he had some opposition, some hostility, but it's nothing like he's going to find when he gets to Jerusalem. He's going to find when he gets to Jerusalem that there is going to be not just disappointment in him and disagreement with him, but there's going to be actually hatred for him. Because you see, he's moving into the religious turf. Just like I've said so many times in the past, religion has no place for the Lord Jesus Christ. It won't tolerate him. Because religion is a structure. It's the cans and the can'ts, the shoulds and the shouldn'ts, the do's and the don'ts. That's what religion is. And our religion says, do this and you're okay, but do that and you're not. And we're better than the other religion because they don't agree with those things. And so we've got all this religion stuff set up. And this is the only way to come to God. You're not going to find your way to God unless you come to Calvary Chapel. Right? Sing the kind of songs we sing. Listen to that fat man up there teaching. That's the only way to heaven, man. You got to come to our church. Really? According to who? Whenever Jesus shows up, that stuff is out the window. It's out the door. Because he never expected anybody to go by the cans and the can'ts, the do's and the don'ts, and the woulds and the shoulds. He doesn't do that. So we're going to see that when he gets down there. So as he's praying, because he's about to enter, this is the next phase of his ministry. In fact, these same people that call these things the years of opportunity or popularity are the very ones that we call this now his year of opposition. Because we're going to see this intense increase on this hostility and rejection and rebellion against who he is. So as it happened, he was alone praying that his disciples joined him. Now, it's always interesting to me that Jesus is off and his disciples are over here. And we're not told, and we probably shouldn't make anything out of this that's not really in the text. But the question I was wondering when I was studying this, I'm like, well, why weren't they praying? You know why? Because they're like me. And I've got a lot of other things I want to do. You know, man, we just had a tough day, man. Lord, we passed baskets out to 5,000 people. We're really kind of tired. We could use a break. And, and the Lord does what he always does. He goes, okay, all right. So off they go, and who knows? They found a pond, and they're swimming in the creek. Who knows? on the mango tree, and they're kicked back in the shade eating the mango, you know, stringing up the hammocks between the two trees. You get the idea, right? We don't know what they were doing. Well, whatever it was, they weren't praying. At least they weren't praying with Jesus. Let's put it that way. So, we don't really know, and I'm not trying to dog them, because that's exactly where I would have been, in the creek and swimming, fishing. You know, that's where I would have been. And you would have too, if you're honest. But anyways, that his disciples joined him. Now notice, they've come to him while he's praying, but he turns now and asks them, because you see, they must come to terms with who he is. They must. And so the first question out of his mouth as they sit down, we thought you were praying, Lord. Well, I was, but here's the question. I want a question. I want you guys to answer a question. Who do the crowds say that I am? Now notice it's the crowds. It's not King Herod. It's not Rome. It's not the priests, the Sadducees. It's not the Pharisees. It's the crowds. Why? Because except for the king, the Sadducees, the Pharisees, and the priests, they were all religious. He already knew what they thought about him. They had already shown that. But what about the crowds? So I want you guys to noodle this through. Who does everybody say that I am? What's out there in the, what's the scuttlebutt out there? You know, what are people saying? Now, he knew exactly what they were saying. This wasn't for him. It was for them. Okay? Well, so they answered and they said, go figure. Some say you're John the Baptist. What a bunch of loonies those are. Right? Those people are off in that group. Separate them, Lord, because they're crackers. We know you ain't John the Baptist. But that's what they're saying. Now, this didn't surprise us. We saw earlier on when Jesus did some things, some miracles, that people said, it's John the Baptist. Right? Everybody's freaking out over it. No, so some said John the Baptist. Now, John the Baptist was well known in that area, especially around Jerusalem. The religious didn't like him at all, because he told them when they came to him and they said, listen, who are you? The priests, Pharisees, and Sadducees, they came to him and said, well, who are you? Are you the Messiah? No, I ain't the Messiah, John said. Well, you're one of the prophets? No. Well, who are you? Well, I'm the voice of one crying in the wilderness. Now, if you were a priest, you would have recognized immediately he was claiming to be Elijah, or at least the ministry of Elijah. You would have recognized that immediately. And they didn't want to have anything to do with him. And so they were out there and stuff, and they left him alone. Well, as long as he's out in the wilderness in another stream, baptizing, doing that wacko stuff, we're okay with that as long as he doesn't come in the city. Leave him out there in scenic, man, where all the crazy people are. It's okay. I love crazy people. Did you see the point? That's what's happening. So they're going there. So they answered. They said, well, John the Baptist. But some say, oh, no, even more than John the Baptist, Elijah. Now, why is Elijah so big? Because Elijah came bringing thunder and fire. We're going to see later on, not today, but as we move through this thing. Well, we're going to touch on it, but we're going to see. Elijah was recognized as a prince. I mean, when you talked about the prophets of God, Elijah was at the top of the heap. Elijah, Yah is God. That was the guy's name. He's the guy, you remember, that stood up against the 400 prophets of the false god of the Babylonians and the Assyrians and all these other Baal. And they said, Baal is God. Elijah said, no, Yahweh's God. Oh, no, Baal is God. See, it's all about El. We don't have to get into that. If you like this kind of stuff, that's why you need to be in the classes. The concept El is the word for God, okay? That's all it means. And the word Yah is what we get. We see Jah or in ours, and it was changed later to Jehovah. But the point is that the wrestling match was not over, between Yah and Baal. It was to find out who was El, who's God. Is it the God of the Babylonians and the nations, or is it the God of Israel? And so he takes on those 400 prophets of that Baal. And of course we know, don't we? Call on your God. Do what you got to do. And they're like, Baal, doing all this stuff and uttering their stuff, burning their incense, Sound familiar? Getting all spaced out, cutting the chicken, running around in circles. You get the idea. Cutting themselves. Baal, we're so serious. Look at what we're doing. We're cutting ourselves. Yeah. That's what our kids are doing today, in case you don't know. Well, we don't call him Baal anymore. We call him modern American society. But that's what they were doing. Their life was so messed up, they'd cut themselves and offer themselves, the Baal. And Elijah's just laughing at him. You guys are nuts. You're going to call on Baal. You know what? Shout louder, Elijah says. Shout louder. Oh, maybe he's asleep. So you got to wake him up. Got to yell a little louder. Come on, there's 400 of you guys. Yell a little louder. Oh, boom. Right? And all the people are watching this, by the way. Here's the battle. See? It's like the world against you and I. That's what's happening here. Oh. Well, they couldn't do anything. Finally, they're exhausted, so they go back, and Elijah says, okay. Oh, and by the way, they had put an altar and a sacrifice on top, and they had dug a moat or put it up there, and the God, whether it was Baal or Jehovah, was supposed to bring fire down from heaven and pew, consume the offering. That's what you call well done. That's what they were supposed to do. Well, Baal never showed up. No fire came down. Sacrifice is still there. Flies buzzing around. Birds trying to get to it. So Elijah goes, okay. So Elijah gets up and he said, dig a moat around this thing. So they dig a moat. He said, now fill it with water. They're like, but I thought this was about fire. Well, it is. But you just dig a trench around this thing and fill it with water. Okay. So they go and they fill it up with water. And then Elijah says, Lord, Yahweh, and he does his thing. You can read this in Kings. And fire comes down and takes the sacrifice and the water and the prophets of Baal. Don't want to be a prophet of Baal. Careful now. Stay away from fire if you're a prophet of Baal. That Elijah. Ooh, the people went, ooh. Because Elijah says, now, this is who God is. He's just proven himself by your own request. Now what are you going to do about it? Now, of course, that's the same Elijah that having done this, Jezebel, Queen Jezebel, hears about him. Elijah. I want that man's life. What does Elijah do? Call fire down from heaven? No. A woman. And he runs out of the wilderness and says, oh, Lord, take me now. Oh, she's going to get me and I don't want to be gotten. Dude, you just whooped 400 priests, man. Yeah, but you don't know Jezebel, dude. Oh, man, she can make life miserable. Yeah, that's what's going on. That Elijah. Oh, Lord, oh, I can't take it anymore. And the Lord said, shut up. That's exactly what he said. Shut up. I have like 700 people that just like you, just because you don't know who they are. Get up. Stop whining. That's what he said. That's all going to play into this, and you'll see why. Nah, some said John the Baptist. Others say Elijah. Or maybe one of the other prophets, Jeremiah. He's pretty important. Daniel. Pretty significant fella. Ezekiel. Oh, my gosh. Ooh, maybe he's one of those guys. All of this contemplation. But do you notice the problem? None of these people are Messiah. The one that those prophets came to serve. Who proclaimed the words of Messiah. Because he said, listen, Elijah, go deal with those prophets. So they can see who I am and that you're my servant. The Messiah. They'll recognize all of this. Oh, and you know what would be the equivalent of today? Well, we believe that Jesus was a wonderful man. I mean, he's an historical figure. No one can argue that. No one would argue that. You'd be a nutcase because our history would say that you're a fool. Oh, we all know Jesus was here. And he lived in a place called Nazareth. We know that. The Romans have records of that. That you can go back and check when Tiberius was ruling. And Claudius and Caligula. They all knew this stuff. So this is historic. You can't argue the fact. So the question is then, what are you going to do with this guy, Jesus? See, because that's the reality of the situation. See, who is he? Who do you say that he is? And that's where we're ultimately headed. But the crowds, they were willing to give him all of this popularity, and they were to say, oh, even one of these guys, one of the old prophets, oh, we think he's a lot. And today we would say, oh, he was wonderful. He was like Gandhi. Oh, he's like the Dalai Lama. He's like this. Fill in the blank, man. Fill it in. We do the same thing. Yeah, we do. He's a good man. He's a great teacher. We know he was a healer, a miracle worker. Oh, so you think he was the Christ? Oh, no, I didn't say that. Right? Because if he's the Christ, then there's this other little problem you got to deal with because there is no Christ without a cross. So you got to come to terms with that. Well, no, wait a second, man. Wait. No, I think he was a great man and stuff, but are you really going to tell me he was God? And then others will say, well, I've studied the Bible and he never claimed to be God. Well, then you should read it again, probably this time with glasses. because he definitely claimed to be God. So that's what we do today. Oh, we just love him. He's such a gentleman, and oh my gosh, all of the religions recognize him. Islam recognizes him as a wonderful man. He was a prophet, but he wasn't as important as Muhammad, who would come 600 years later. The Hindu would claim that he was, like Gandhi and some of the others. And it goes on and on and on. You get the idea. That's what the crowd say. But then Jesus does the unthinkable. He points the finger and he said, but you. Notice it's gotten real personal here. This isn't no longer about hearsay. Great. So that's what the people are saying. Their perception is obviously a bit off. But the real issue here, fellas, is this. What about you? Who am I to you? And you know what's interesting about this? The way that this is written, they went. They didn't know. They didn't know. They knew he was Messiah, but they didn't know what that means. And that's why we're going to slowly move into this, if I'll shut up and keep going. But you get the idea. Who do you say I'm? You know, now, here's a point to make for you. Now, listen. You, every single one of you, and I don't have time to point out all your names, you must come to terms with this question as well. Because it will not only affect you in this life, but in the life to come, and where you spend it in the next life. This is the most important question ever asked at any time, in any language, under any circumstances. Bottom line, there is no other important question. Who do you say that Jesus is? Because it will have bearing on where you head when you shut your eyeballs and your ticker stops on this side of the great beyond. It will determine where you spend your eternity. And you're an eternal being, so get over it. I don't care what they tell us today. You're an eternal being created in the image and likeness of God, who is an eternal being. It's just the way it is. Well, I don't believe that. Too stinking bad. You'll know soon enough. Won't be able to argue the point then. Well, I'm an atheist. I'm an agnostic. For now. For now, you might be, like you might think you are, till you're ready to cross that precipice, and then we'll see. Because we all know deep in the heart of hearts that there is another life after this one. This isn't all there is. It cannot be all there is. We all know. So stop coming up with all of the, listening to all the philosophers and all the jargon that we find on the websites and the internet and all the blah. Oh, this is what it is. These people don't know. They're like the prophets of Baal, guys. They don't know. This question changes everything. Who do you say that I am? And again, the apostles. Remember, they had watched him bring the dead back to life twice. They had watched him take a guy who was completely controlled by an evil spirit and cleanse that man and move him away from the tombs and away from the dead and bring him life. We watched him speak to a storm and say, enough, stop with the wind, stop with the waves. And it does. Who do you say I am, you guys? And they didn't. And then what's interesting, notice this. In verse 20, in the last part of verse 20, and Peter answered and said, the Christ of God. Now that sounds really good on the surface, because Luke is kind of easy on Peter. Because he's a Gentile, he's a doctor, secondly. So he kind of takes the easy road. But the reality of it is what Peter said in Matthew's gospel, Jesus said, blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonas, right? That's what bar means, because God has revealed this to you. We often call this Peter's confession. Folks, Peter confessed nothing. He didn't get it, just like you and I don't get it. And the only reason the words came out of his mouth was because God had said, here, I want this known. And so God used Peter as a speaker and said, you're the Christ, the Son of the living God, according to Matthew. And Jesus said, that's right, Peter. How blessed you are that God has chosen to use you to make that comment. Kind of changes the perspective on things a bit, doesn't it? They didn't understand, but there it was. Can you imagine what they were saying when he said that? And then Jesus makes that comment, and they're like, this came from God. And they're looking at Peter going, whoa. Same as you and I when we say that God has shared something with us and we need to share it with everybody else. Well, in that case, you are. Well, that's probably true. But nevertheless, So you were the Christ, the Son of the living God. Now here's an interesting aspect to this. Oops, crud. The significance of this, you didn't see that. You didn't see that. I got to put notes on my notes to say, pay attention here, dude. All right. So the reason this was significant, as I already said, and this is where we were headed to, was they only had the ability to see in a straight line. Okay? From the Old Testament. We must remember, I say this so often, that when all this was taking place, they did not have a Bible. They didn't. If they were lucky, their family had a scroll of one particular aspect of the Old Testament. You know, the rolled up scrolls? That's what they had. There was no such thing as a New Testament. There wasn't. It didn't exist. How do we know? Because this was all written after the fact. Luke was telling us what had taken place. So they had nothing to rely on in those days. So we can't fault them. They had the Old Testament. Well, from the Old Testament, the prophets, who these guys would have believed in, now the slide. Now open your eyes. The mountain peaks of the Old Testament. This is what the prophets saw. Now, I've showed this before, but it's significant because it keeps popping up. This is what those guys understood. Now, remember, prophets, okay, I have to say this again. The word prophet does not mean a foreteller of the future. That's our perspective on it. That is not the biblical perspective. The prophets were, thus saith the Lord. Their job was to tell people what God said. And most of what they said had to do with what was happening in the day. Sometimes God would tell them to speak about an event in the future. Then that's when it becomes predictive. But for the most part, these guys simply proclaimed the word of God. Nothing more, nothing less. That's what a prophet is. Not somebody that sits around and says, oh, I see clouds. Oh, there's a smell. Yeah. Probably been smoking stuff that they shouldn't have been smoking. But anyways, so this is what the prophets, those that proclaimed the truth, because they were given the task of proclaiming the truth, they were able to see and identify. Well, the first thing was that Messiah would be born. And even though the Jews didn't recognize it when Jesus showed up because they'd gotten so far off of the Old Testament is clear that his birth would be miraculous because he would come through a virgin. They knew that. They failed to understand it. Okay? They also knew that Messiah would ultimately be crucified. Again, though they twisted it and they perverted it, they had the book of Isaiah, chapter 53, which clearly says what's going to happen to the Messiah. And of course, from that, because of that rejection, they created this whole other thing. And there's all sorts of different perspectives that they took on this. But one of them is that the nation of Israel is actually what's being spoken of there, not an individual person. Well, then they said, well, that doesn't really work because it's clearly talking about an individual. So then we get, well, you know what? There must be two messiahs showing up. Funny how when we can't figure things out, we start creating things, right? And then the next thing they saw was that the nation of Israel, because of the Messiah had come and done his thing, that the nations were going to hate the nation of Israel. They saw that. In other words, they wrote about today. They told us then, 25, 26, 2700 years ago, exactly what we're watching happen on TV. Exactly. And I must state this again. Remember, there was no such thing as Israel before 1948. This has only been within the last 60 plus years. That's it. There wasn't no such thing as Israel for 2,000 years since the time of Jesus until 1948. That's why we know they're not to blame, even though they would tell us they're to blame. But Israel and the nations, they could see that. And then they could see that there was going to be this world ruler who was going to rise up, and he was going to be a false Messiah. And he was going to, in fact, come onto the scene in the nation of Israel, but he's going to come from the nations, and he's going to establish himself not as just a ruler of the world, but as God himself. I am God. I am the one that has all of the answers to man's dilemma. And don't think for a second that's not precisely what Ahmadinejad is looking for when he prays for the Mahdi. Because they believe that the Mahdi is that person. Well, they don't call him Antichrist, but that he's going to come back and bring peace. Of course, the only way there's going to be peace on this world is when everybody embraces Islam. And the world is ruled by Sharia, Sharia law. Islam, this peaceful religion, which will slaughter you if you disagree with them or if you burn some of their books. We just watched it. Done happened on the news, right? In Afghanistan. They killed people because some of their Qurans got burned. The religion of peace, now I remind you. Oh, that was a rebel few. No, that was the nation of Islam. It always happens, always, always, always. And I don't know why we're always so surprised when God told us exactly what was going to happen. Anyway, so they were able to see his birth, his death. They were able to see that because of who he was coming into this world, that the nations would gather, and there was going to ultimately be this one individual who was going to get control of those nations and stand against the Messiah. However, that Messiah would come back and basically whoop up on him. Messiah would return. And he will establish his kingdom, the Messianic kingdom. And that's precisely what will happen. We're watching it unfold right before our eyes. Okay? So notice, they saw all of this stuff. But there was a valley. Because they didn't get the whole concept of Messiah's death as a sacrifice, and they didn't connect the dots with redemption, that he would have to die to save souls, they missed it, and it passed right over them. But what he was talking about was the church. And that's where we find ourselves today. We're in that dip right there. They could not see that. The apostles couldn't see it. They didn't get it. Who do you say there? Well, you're the Christ, the Son of the living God. Well, how come Peter didn't come up with that one on his own? How come he needed a little help from God? Because he didn't understand what that meant. He didn't get it. So this is what they saw and didn't see. And the apostles, folks, are not going to get it for quite some time. Because they're like you and I. And they've got their own perspectives and their own opinions and so on and so forth. So you would think, oh, great. Well, now that this has happened, he wants them to go out and tell everyone. Well, not so much. Look at verse 21. And he strictly warned and commanded them to tell this to no one. Why? I mean, isn't this something that you should share with everybody? Absolutely. But this is something that should not be shared with everybody until you get a hold of what it means. They weren't getting it. Even Peter didn't get it when he said the words. So Jesus said, look it, this is going to become clear. There's going to come a time when you will proclaim this. But for now, because you lack in understanding, I don't want you going out there. There's clearly enough confusion when people are saying I'm Elijah, one of the prophets, or even John raised from the dead. The last thing we need to do is have you yo-yos running out there with a lack of understanding and spreading another thing that went out. I don't want you to do that. It's not the time. That's all he was saying. This is not the time. The time would come when they watched that last year of his life, which they didn't know would be the last year, when they watched him hang on the cross. They didn't know he was going to hang on a cross because they didn't understand redemption. And when they got to see him raised from the dead, because they didn't understand that, even though they had it in the Old Testament. Oh, yes, the resurrection's in the Old Testament. And they kept moving forward, and they weren't going to get it until all of this happened. And then 50 days after Jesus would resurrect from the ground, he would give them the gift of his Spirit, and then their eyes were told were opened, and they began to understand all of the things that he taught them. They didn't get it. So I don't want you going out and talking about this now. Keep this to yourselves and watch. You'll understand what this means. So he strictly warned them, and he commanded them to tell this to no one, saying, the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders, chief priests, and scribes. There's those, the religious that we talked about. And he must be raised on the third day. Now, Luke does not record for us at this point, but Matthew does. Again, Luke is kind of mellow, apparently. But Matthew tells us that when Jesus made that statement. Now remember, Peter had just said, you're the Christ, the Son of the living God. Jesus says, that's awesome, Peter. You've truly been blessed from God to be able to say that for all to hear. He immediately follows that up with this statement. So here's who I am. you are the Messiah, the Son of the living God, or in Luke's gospel, the Christ of God, okay? And here's what it means. Remember the dip. They didn't know what it meant for Messiah. They were thinking kingdom all the way. Later on, we're going to read where they said, are you going to establish your kingdom at this point? Come in and whoop up on Rome and the Assyrians and the Babylonians and those crazy nuts over in America. No, there was no such thing as America in those days. But is that what you're going to do? And Jesus said, no, that's not what I'm going to do. That's not yet. And you don't need to worry about that. You have a job to do. And we're still supposed to be about that job. So this is who I am, the Son of the living God. This is what it means. The Son of Man must suffer many things. Suffer many things. Now, we all know what happened. Again, historical. We have biblical accounts, but there are also historical accounts of what happened to this man and to others that went through it as well. He's going to suffer many things. Ultimately, he's going to be rejected by the Jews, and then he's going to be killed by the Romans. Well, actually, he wasn't killed, but from our perspective, he was. He's going to suffer many things. He's going to suffer false arrest. They're going to arrest him on trumped-up charges, a bunch of lies. They're going to bring false witnesses against him. These same 12 guys right here, well, 11 of those 12 guys, are going to turn and betray him. Oh, it'll be Peter that will deny, but they'll all betray. Because in the garden, what happened when he was arrested? They beat feet and got the crowd out of Dodge. See? So the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected. And here's why Jesus wasn't interested in what the religious had to say about him, but instead of the crowds, because this is what the religious do, the elders, the chief priests, and the scribes. It's going to be rejected by them. That's why he had such a tough time with them. He called them hypocrites, called them a brood of vipers. He called them whitewashed tombs. He talked about how what they do keeps people out of heaven instead of bringing people in. Those guys. Well, nothing has changed. We have our religious today that make it impossible to come to God because of all the rules and regulations, when there are no such thing as rules and regulations to follow Christ. You simply do it because you want to do it, because you know how much he loved you. That's really kind of all there is. So he'd be rejected by the elders and the chief priests and the scribes. Okay, they could understand that, but then the next part, and be killed. Oh, no. Focused on that. And after he says it, be killed, and of course, and be raised the third day. But that's all they heard. Killed. Oh, well, they knew what he was talking about. Because to do those very things and be rejected was a capital crime by capital punishment. But the Israelites could not give out the ultimate punishment, capital punishment. Only the Romans could do that. So they knew immediately what he was saying here, crucifixion. And it freaked them out. Wait a minute, we just said you were Messiah. Now they're going to kill you? Now, again, Luke doesn't record it, but Matthew does. And at this point, as Jesus is talking to them, and there are some other people around, and he makes this statement, Peter, we read, grabs him and pulls him aside and says, never! This is not going to happen to you. I won't allow this to happen to you. You stand behind me, Lord. I'll take a bullet for you. Not going to allow this. I'm not going to let anybody treat you like that. And what does Jesus do? Thanks, Peter. I'm so glad you got my back, man. Thanks for watching out for me, dude. Did he not just speak to a storm? Yeah, Peter, you and I. Oh, Lord, you can count on me. Yeah, sure, we're just like that. It's never going to happen, Lord. I'm not going to allow it to happen. It cannot be. You, we just said you were the Messiah, and now you're talking about crucifixion? Are you nuts? And Jesus turns his back on him, because remember, Peter had turned him aside. He's standing here now. Peter turns his back, and he said, get behind me, Satan. And now he addresses the rest of the guys. Yeah, that's what was going on there that day. Because the Lord had just spoken through Peter about who Jesus was. Well, the enemy had just done the same thing. Because the enemy's not going to allow that, folks. The enemy of your soul and mine will not allow that. Because if he allows this, because he knows what the Jews don't know, because he knows his Bible far better than you and I, he knows that if Jesus does this, is rejected, suffers all these things, is killed and raised from the dead, he knows that his days are numbered. He's not going to let that happen. I got to try to stop this. So he does the same thing God does. And out of the same mouth that said, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God, is, I will not allow you to be the Christ, the Son of the living God. Won't tolerate it. So Jesus recognizes what it is. Get behind me, Satan. It wasn't Peter. He knew what was taking place, and he whips around and puts his back right to him. Pretty staggering. And you know what he said? As he turned his back on Peter, and he was now facing the other guys. This is what he said in verse 23. Then he said to them, with his back to Peter, if anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. That's what he said. You think it's going to be costly for me to bring redemption in as Messiah? It's going to be costly for you as well. They don't like me, they're not going to like you. They don't accept me, they're not going to accept you. So if you desire to come after me, this is what it's going to cost you as well. It's never been free to live the Christian life. And this mumbo jumbo, you Christians are just weak and use Christianity as a crutch. Really? Which one of us stands against the crowd? Who's got the crutch, yo-yo? You're the one with the crutch because you go with the crowds. How is it that we who stand against the flow and say, no, 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 there is a God, there is a Christ, there is salvation, and he's offered it to you. Take it, knowing full well how unpopular it is. And yet we'll stand against the flow. Who's on the crutch? Following Christ ain't no crutch, folks. It takes real men and real women. Amen. It's as simple as that. And it's time we started being men and women. We have the saying that we always say to the guys, man up. You want to follow Christ? Man up. Shut up and man up. Do what you know needs to be done. Enough. Enough. The last thing we need is a bunch of spineless jellyfish calling themselves believers. We got enough of them people. We have to step over them all the time, and they stink. We don't need any more of that. This is what I need. If you're going to follow me, then here's what you have to do. Notice the first word, if. It's conditional, folks. You don't have to. If. You can make up your choice. You could sit in here week after week and open your Bibles and sing the songs and have the big smiles and then go out and live as you choose to for the rest of the week because, well, next week we'll have to go again and everything will be okay. That's how you can live. And frankly, that's how most of us live. Let's be honest here. That's how we live. This is only important to us while we sit in here and listen to me drool and slobber. Leave this door, all of a sudden lunch is more important. I know it is for me. The game, you know, oh, I got to go to work, and oh, there's just, well, there you go. It's men, it's time to man up. We're who we are every day, at least we better be. So if, it's conditional. Anyone, it's universal. Well, I don't know that much. Well, you don't have to know much. Do you want to follow him? Yes, then do it. But you don't know what happened in my life. It doesn't matter what happened in your life. You don't even know what's happened in my life now. I don't care what's happening in your life right now. Move on. Leave it behind and move on. But you don't know how hard it is. Really? Yes, I do. Oh, absolutely I do. I know how difficult it is to make that choice. So if it's conditional, anyone, it's universal. If anyone desires, it's intentional. You got to want this, folks. You got to want it. If you don't, if it's not that thing which is priority in your life, then you're going to flounder along like a fish out of water. And again, you're going to stink. Find yourself having a hard time breathing. Because you're trying to function in a world in which God has asked you to separate yourself from. That will kill you. That's what's going to happen. So if anyone desires to come after me, and there it is. There's the choice. Are you going to come after him? Oh, yes, I want to come after him. You know where that road leads? Well, no. Well, look at where it says you're going to come after. The first place that it leads is self-denial. Uh-oh. Well, I'm not so sure about this following thing now. I don't know about that. Deny myself. Yeah. What does that mean? It means that he becomes more important than you do. Oh, I already feel that. No, you don't. No, we don't. Oh, Lord, you mean everything to me. Really? What was that you watched last night? Well, you know, no. You know, where was that you went? what was that you said? Well, so you know what? You really don't. So until you come to that point, stop saying that. Stop saying it, because it's clear you don't. It's clear. You play the church game, you play the really cool thing, and you think everything's okay. It was not okay. You won't survive if that's the choice you make, and it's your choice to make. If you desire to come after me, you've got to deny yourself. Well, how do you deny yourself? You pick up a cross. Ooh. Now, for you and I, that doesn't mean anything. But if you were those guys in that day, you knew it precisely what it meant. It meant you were going to be crucified, and you were going to carry your own instrument of death. This was not suicide. It was sacrifice. Because if you were condemned for capital punishment and Rome was going to crucify you, they had the vertical poles already in the ground. Don't believe the pictures you see of him carrying the whole cross. You carry the crossbar, and you carried it on your back. And then they laid you down and nailed you to it. And then they lifted that up and clunked it into that vertical beam. And then they nailed your feet. You've got to deny yourself, self-denial. But that's not all. You've got to be willing to sacrifice. Ooh. They say to this day, and this is not believers, although we say it too, obviously, but the world itself says, there has never, ever been devised by mankind a more brutal form of death than crucifixion. It is the worst man has ever devised, because not just the pain and the attempts were to make it worse. When they drove the nails, they drove them between the two bones in there. You know what's in there? Your radial nerve. You know what radial nerve is? Hit your elbow on the corner or something, you'll find out real fast what it is. That's where they drove it. They drove it through there intentionally to hit that nerve. That was the point. This was about suffering, folks. That's why Rome wanted you to know that they were very serious about standing against them. And then they would hang you with all of that weight on there, onto that top piece. And then they would drive it through the tops of your feet. Do you know why again? Because that's where your nerve path runs. And they would do it just enough so your knees are slightly bent, so that you could hold yourself up to catch a breath and then let yourself down because of the pain in your feet. And the more it went on, the more you struggled, the more the inability came to breathe, the fluid would build up in your lungs, and you would slowly, over literally hours, drown in the edema collecting in your lungs, which is why when they punched Jesus' lungs, water and blood came out, because the fluid had collected there from that suffering. Want to know how bad it is? We have a term when we try to describe pain at its worst. What's it called? Excruciating. Ex what? Cruciating is crucifixion. It's just our modern version of it. That ought to tell you something. Well, you got to be willing to pick up that cross. Holy crud. Now, wait a second. That's what it means. But you can't just do it once. Notice the next word, daily. Oh, man. You got to do this every day, folks. Your being in here today and willing to do all this stuff today will not get you through tomorrow. It'll barely get you through the rest of the day. It's an everyday occurrence to lay your life down, and then you follow me. And here's the reason. I'm gonna have to stop there. But the next verse, and we'll catch up with that next week because we're gonna run out myself out of time. For whoever desires to save his life will lose it. Well, I'm not gonna do that. I love you, Lord, and you know that, but I just can't do that. Because there are just things that I know I can't do, you know I can't do, and so I just can't do it. So ultimately what he's saying, I want to control my life. That's what you're saying. You've just made yourself Lord. And that you know the best way to have the best of life. But in the next verse, and I can't put it up there because it'll show you another slide that I have hidden from you. Whoever desires to save his life will lose it. If that's what you want, well then fine, you can do that. But guess what? Here's the reality. This is ultimately profit and loss. You will lose your soul. You can't have it both ways. You can't live over here and then expect this over here. It will cost you. But whoever loses his life for my sake will save it. Oh, those crazy Christians are talking about killing themselves. That's not what it's saying. That's not what it's saying at all. And you know what? In the few times that I've actually done this and laid my life aside and actually lived, you know what I found? More peace, more happiness, more contentment, more joy than I have ever experienced at anything else in my life. And I've experienced a lot. It was the only time. And I cried out to God, why can't I just maintain this? He said, because you don't always want to carry the cross that you told me you were willing to carry. And I just find myself going, well, thank God you were willing to do what I could not do. So it's okay, Rick. We're going to work our way through this. I'm going to help you to understand. And he is. And I studied these passages this week. And I read these things and I thought, ooh, I hope so-and-so is there to hear this. No, I didn't. Although it does cross my mind, but I have to wrestle with it because I don't want to do that. It's an easy thing to do, believe me. But I just was reading this and I just pushed myself back from my desk and I just went, Lord, I can't do this. And he said, precisely, you can't. But I've given you the power and the authority, the ability to do so. Trust me, Rick. That's all you got to do is trust me. I know, Lord. And I'm trying. Well, yes and no. There are a lot of things that you got to change. Yeah. In other words, I've told you guys 100 times, when I study this stuff, I walk out of my office bloodied and bruised because the Lord just whoops the crud out of me. He says, are you paying attention? Well, yeah, yeah. Well, then, well, obviously not. So this is a struggle that we all have. And folks, it's not going to go away. But you got to start denying yourself. If you know there's something to not look at, stop looking. If you know there's something that you shouldn't read, stop reading. If you shouldn't say it, stop saying it. You know where you need to be, what you need to do? That's why we do this thing we call church. We're not here because we have it figured out. We're here because we don't have it figured out. Church is full of hypocrites. You dang right it's full of hypocrites. Every one of us. Because we claim to have this relationship that we all know we don't have. So we're learning to not be hypocrites. Yeah, the church is full of hypocrites. Absolutely correct. Starting with the dude up here. That's exactly right. But we come together, A, because this is where he is. He said, look, and if there's a couple of you guys gathered together, I'm going to hang out with you. Well, there's more than a couple of us. That means he's hanging out. And also because this is where God's word is, the truth. I get enough of the lies during the rest of the week, don't you? I get sick of it. It makes me nauseous. I'm tired of it. All of the lies and these people trying to tell us what they think they know is right and stuff and that everything's getting better and blah, 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 blah. These people are nutcases. Look around you, man. We've talked about this. I talked to the group on Thursday. So, oh, we're waiting, man, for the brotherhood of man. At some point, everyone's going to learn to just get along. Well, until you don't show up with their Nike special editions, they will. What? Yeah. The brotherhood of man. We can all live in peace as long as we all get a pair of tennis shoes. As long as the screen doesn't go on like it did in England when they couldn't watch Manchester United because it couldn't fit in the screen. Or in the stadium, sorry. So they had to watch it outside. The screen goes down. What do? They riot. People die. That man? Really? The one that would storm through the doors on Black Friday after Thanksgiving and actually kill people to get to a deal on their Game Boy? And there's a new age and a new generation just waiting around the corner for us if we could just get it together. We're not going to get it together. We're not. Deal with it. It's not going to happen. I don't care who's on the throne. Well, except unless, of course, the Lord. But I mean, from a world perspective. It's not going to happen. It's not. We can't get along with anything. I mean, to think that I would have to spend eternity with people who like the Cowboys, it's like, oh, please don't. You get the idea, right? Oh, my gosh, that's horrendous. And we think it's funny, but there are actually people that, well, look at what happened to the baseball fan there with the Dodgers and the Giants. Yeah, but we're all just going to learn to get along. No, we're not. No, we're not. All of this, folks, was answered on that cross. When Jesus came down here and he said, look, here's the way that you should live. You should be willing to put other people first. It's what drove him to the cross. And it's the reason that we take the time on a regular basis to remember the cross. To remember the fact that what he did on that cross was took my place. Me. I'll never, ever understand that. Never. Well, I can't say never. From in here, maybe in eternity I'll get it. But until then, I cannot understand why he would give his life for me. It just, well, he loves you. Well, I know he loves me, but still. I love a lot of people too, but I ain't dying for you. Unless, of course, you share your burrito with me. But no, I can't understand that he would substitute his life for me. When I know that what I deserve from God, no one had to tell me. I know. But yet he would do that. And as that saying goes, as corny as it may sound, and he spread his arms out and he said, Rick, this is how much I love you. And I'm just like, I'll never grasp that kind of love, never. And that as his life flows out of him, that flowing out of him would have the ability to cleanse me, to wash me clean, to take all of that nonsense away. So that God now looks at me completely different than he looked at me before. That's what the communion table is about, folks. And we have to remember that first coming is not, it means nothing without the second. He's coming back. And what you and I think about it and what the world thinks about it is absolutely irrelevant. It didn't want him coming the first time and he still showed up. He's coming back. He is. And Paul said, whenever you think about those things, I want you to remember the Lord's death and what that meant, that gap that everybody else seemed to miss. Paul was the first one the Lord revealed what was happening in that dip. Now, the others got it, but God used Paul to explain that. And he was saying that first coming for redemption and to set us free from sin, as wonderful as it was for one reason, and it was to point to his return. But Paul also said, so listen, before you remember his substitutional death in the bread, before you remember the fact that he washed your sins clean with the life that flowed out of him, in other words, his blood, you need to make sure your heart is prepared. You need to make sure that you understand that what's going on here is significant. Because if you don't, if you do this lighthearted, if you do this backward, if you do it without paying any attention, then you're going to eat and drink damnation, judgment unto yourself, because you're spitting on the blood of Christ and the sacrifice of Christ. So Paul said, search your hearts. Make sure that your heart is clean before God. And you know what's really cool about that? Is that means whatever you brought in here today, you could just lay it clean because he's the only one that can do it. So just lay it out there for him. You don't have to wait till next week. That's the whole point of confession. Confess, deal with it, move on. Now, if there are things that you got to take care of, people you've wronged, things that you've said, well, then you go deal with them. That's between you and them, and ultimately the Lord. So we prepare ourselves. We don't want to take this lightly. And remember, Paul said, the Lord's death until he comes again. So let's search our hearts as the guys come forward to pass out the elements.